Hello and welcome to H for May Talk. I'm Mark Orchard, CFO at Portsmouth Hospitals, and in this episode I get to connect with the Director of Finance who I've held in the most highest regard for as long as I can remember. I've learned so much from this person and not ever been afraid to borrow and steal heavily from his all-round mature and forward-thinking approach to NHS finance, whether that's the aligned incentive contract, finance team development and approaches, or most recently, working day one reporting, just to name a few. But within this conversation, we'll pick up all of those things and much, much more, I'm sure. I am, of course, talking about Simon Worthington, Director of Finance at the Leeds Teaching Hospitals NHS Trust. Simon, very warm welcome to HMA Talk today. How are you doing, sir?
I'm okay, Mark. Thanks for that intro. That was really nice. I'm blushing appropriately.
Excellent. Yeah. Excellent. Now, listen, seriously, we don't connect as often as I'd like to, but I do hold you in highest regard.
Thank you.
I've borrowed a lot of stuff from Leeds and Bolton and other places you've been at over the years. You've been a bit of a trailblazer, genuinely, for our profession. So firstly, before we get any further in this, I want to thank you personally for things I've pinched and borrowed, but also on behalf of the service, because I think you are one of the ones that's pushing us forward.
Well, thank you.
Listen, we're going to do the usual thing with the podcast, Simon, if that's okay. I'm going to take a bit of a career walk through. You kindly sent me a summary of your CV, if you like, before we had this conversation. But if it's okay with you, I'm going to ask you in a minute to summarise your career from how you joined the NHS, the steps all the way up really to Leeds, where you've been, of course, for the last 6 years. And then as we go through the podcast, what I'd really love to do is to unpack some of the things I've pinched from you, some of the things I've already mentioned in the introduction,
Sure. And
some of the other things that I think you're held in high regard for. That'll take us into a number of places. And then I'll do the usual thing, Simon, if that's okay, towards the end. I'll also reintroduce the sort of quick fire round so we can just get to know you as a person a bit more. Does that sound like a plan?
Fine. That's great.
Good stuff. All right. Well, why don't you kick off then? Tell us how you got into the NHS. Tell us about your journey all the way up to Leeds.
Well, marvellous. Well, thanks, Mark. I mean, I reflect as a bit of advice that I give colleagues about preparing for interviews. I reflect on an interview I did where they asked me that very question, well, tell us about your career. About half an hour later, I thought I've overrun slightly, so don't let me do that. Yeah, so unlike many colleagues that I've heard talk about their career choice, I sort of fell into being in the NHS. So I needed a job in Leeds in 1988. For anybody who remembers 1988, there weren't many jobs around. I'd just finished university. I'd done a degree in politics.
Right.
And as part of that, we'd done a semester or a term on health policy in England. Yeah. So I could spout all this good stuff about health policy. It was all the Griffiths reviews and the Rayner reviews and all these things at the time. So I went to my interview at what was then the Leeds Western Health Authority, which is basically the west half of Leeds, the LGI. Right. And I did an interview where I marvelled them with all my knowledge of health policy. And they kept asking me questions like, well, but what do you think we do in finance? By which they meant pay invoices and salaries and things like that, which I had no idea there were such things. So started in Leeds. I basically went around various management accounting jobs in and around Yorkshire. So Leeds to Barnsley, the Barnsley Health Authority, Barnsley Trust, then on to Doncaster, then on to Huddersfield. For over the first 10 years of my career, which was all great. I had a marvellous time and learned absolutely loads. I was very lacklustre in passing my exams. I didn't put an appropriate focus on that. So that's another thing I always advise people now, pass your exams. So I sort of decided to pass my exams when I met my wife and I realised I needed to sort myself out and have a proper career, etc. So I did then pass them. So that was good. I got to Huddersfield Trust, newly formed. I was at sort of assistant director level. And then, strangely, at that point, so I hadn't been deputy yet. I started applying for DOF jobs at small trusts. At the time, there were more small trusts than there are now. And after five goes, eventually got one at what was known as, I did a secondment at South Huddersfield PCT. I suppose that was a very small PCT. Colleagues can remember when PCTs were set up. It was shortly just after then. Well, there you go. And it was had all sorts of problems. I don't mean that in a bad way. I'm not being critical of anybody, but you could argue perhaps they've been set up slightly to fail, at least financially. And did that for just about a year and then got a permanent job at Tees East and North Yorkshire Ambulance Service, or TENYAS, which was very small, £50 million turnover and a forecast expenditure when I started of £55 million. So income, interesting. Right. Got into sort of working in organisations that had got to issues at the time and sort of working and improving things. Then went from that to the Yorkshire Ambulance Service, in 2006, which again, that had all sorts of performance problems, quality problems. It was newly formed. It was a merger. And also, it is a true fact that one of the previous organizations there, both their chief exec and finance director, had gone to prison for fraud. So, you know, there was so there was a lot of focus on governance and things like that there, and sort of building lots of things about building things up from ground zero, if you like. And also that during this period, the idea of working day one had sort of dawned on me, and implemented that in those three organizations. So that was good. Then is this all right, Mark? I'm going on a great length.
Yeah, no, this is good. This is all good.
Then what did it do? Oh, right. Well, then I had my little sojourn into being a chief exec. So I was a deputy chief exec at the Yorkshire Ambulance Service all the time I was there. And it was very challenging from point of view of performance. And when the CQC first started registering trusts, we were registered with conditions because our performance wasn't good enough. So we were just getting out of that. My chief exec at the time left because they couldn't recruit. I didn't apply for the job, and you know, because they couldn't recruit to chief exec, I was sort of acting up and did that for nearly a year. I did eventually, I won't go into the circumstances, I did eventually apply for the job of chief exec and didn't get shortlisted.
Oh, no.
It's not... Yeah, well, one of the multiple ways. It's not about the now, Simon. You're doing a great job in the now. It's about what we need for the future.
Wow.
Apparently. I got the chance to go down to, and this is just when the SHAs and what have you were being abolished. Yeah, anybody remembers down then.
Oh, yeah.
And many colleagues will know a guy called Rob Cooper, who's the Yorkshire and Humber SHA finance director at the time. He got a job down at South London Healthcare, which some colleagues will remember. It doesn't exist anymore. It got abolished. It was put under Trust Special Administration. But before that had happened, Rob had been got the job down there as finance director. And it had at the time the biggest deficit in the country, which was a sort of £70 million deficit, very big at the time. And Rob asked me to go down to be his deputy. You know, when I say asked, he said, asked me to apply for the jobs, you know what I mean? Which I did, and I did get. So it was a bit strange. So I've gone from being finance director and deputy chief exec to chief exec for a bit. And then I was now a deputy, which, you know, in terms of salary terms, it was quite interesting. That worked out all right for me, you know, but it was just an interesting perspective. I then did that for about 18 months. I couldn't do it much longer because the organization got abolished. And that was, you know, from point of view of team resilience, and you know, leadership challenges and everything, a really fantastic finance team down in South London Healthcare. And you know, we were playing for pride for the last half of that, really, you know,
been
abolished, and learned a lot, made some good friends down there. So then I needed another job, and the job at Bolton came up, and there was many sort of things there. Bolton again is a really great organization, lots of really great people. They'd gone through a bit of a difficult time. And I got into deficits sort of unexpectedly just before, if we remember, the last big squeeze on finance.
Yeah.
I get my years mixed up as I get older, but, you know, it just got into deficit ahead of everybody else. And it was an FT, so the classic FT way of doing things. They appointed a new chair. Many of the board left, and new exec team and new board were brought in. So we did the turnaround at Bolton there. That was really good. And, you know, worked also, came up with things like Annette Walker, who's the CFO still at Bolton. She was CCG CFO at the time. We went through a bit of a bad period in terms of using PBR to try and further our, you know, objectives. And it was really bad. It was terrible. It made me feel terrible and made her feel terrible. But eventually we came to our senses and we came up with the aligned incentive contract. So that was good.
Yeah.
And when there was Bolton, that first started getting into all the future-focused finance stuff, which is now one NHS Finance. And then, really sad, Tony Whitfield, who was the finance director here at Leeds, he got ill. And eventually, his post came up. I'd been at Bolton for about 4.5 years. So I applied for the Leeds job and really delighted to get that, because that's like my dream job, if you like. It's sort of my local hospital, one of the biggest trusts in the country. And really delighted to get that. And, you know, been here 6 years now, which is fabulous. We've been through COVID and all those things. Team, wonderful team. Team won Finance Team of the Year in 2018. And again, done lots of really positive stuff here and really moved forward with what is now one NHS Finance. So yeah, that's about it.
No, that's really good. And I thought, listen, I normally actually walk the sort of career summary myself through these podcasts, but I actually thought you'd do more justice to that. And I'm pleased I did, because but what it does do, Simon, is it allows us now to get into some hooks, because there's quite a lot in there to unpack, I think. So I want to get into a few things. So I want to circle back around working day one. Align incentive contracts. I want to talk about financial improvement and particularly reflect on your experience, but really I'm interested in views on where we're going as well, in terms of where we are now and where we're going. Yeah. And of course, I want to also cover off what is clearly a genuine passion for yours, which is finance skills development, clinical engagement, and all those things that have helped you along the way deliver, but has also given you a real credible platform as part of Future Focus Finance to lead for the service as well. So where should we start with all that? Why don't we start with working day one? Well, you're known for that for a number of reasons, but what I hadn't realized until sort of a bit of prep for this session was just how far back. I knew you'd achieved it at Bolton, because I think I was on a panel for one of the awards at one point where that got a mention. So I knew you took it into Bolton, and then I knew you'd taken it on to Leeds. So I knew Leeds wasn't the first place. But what I hadn't appreciated was that you'd actually, early on in your career, in the way you've just described, done that already before. So you're a long-standing working day one advocate. Unpack some of that in terms of reasons why, what you feel you get from it, and why everybody should be doing that, really.
Well, fine. Well, thanks, Mark. So, I mean, when I was a management accountant, I was always a bit frustrated by how long it took to, produce the numbers. Okay. Yeah. And I was all sort of campaigning, can't we do it quicker? Can't we do it quicker? And I thought we could do it quicker. And, never really got anywhere with that. One of the advantages of being a finance director in an extremely small organization, like the South Huddersfield PCT, you're broadly doing it all yourself anyway. I mean, there were some good colleagues there, but, I can remember I sat in my house putting together the month-end position.
Right. Yeah?
And just so happened, might be a bit topical as well. We're in the middle in West Yorkshire at the time, in about 2003, if I remember correctly, of implementing shared services. There was some implementation issue, shall we put it that way. So, loads of adjustments needed to do to get the position straight. Yeah. And so I just basically came up with the idea at that time. I thought, all right, well, if I'm having to do all these adjustments, essentially, how can I do them? And I say me, because it was largely me that was making a lot of these adjustments at the time, and then get them the numbers out really quick. So I started to do that there, and that, for a few months, fine. No one noticed. Do you know what I mean? There was no fanfare about that. When I got to Tenyas, which is a really small, £55 million organisation, really small.
Ambulance service, yeah.
And I was looking for ways to, so I sort of innately wanted to do that again, because that seemed like a good thing. But I was looking to ways to engage the team, and sort of out around improvement and, wanting to do things better. And so again, we did, and that's a big thing with working day one. So quite often, there's one, people are suspicious of it, right? When I say people, I'm not being passive aggressive, but quite often people are, it must be wrong, or you're just making it all up and this type of thing. And you must be having to make corrections all the time. And there's a level of suspicion of it for that reason. And then there's a level that colleagues don't think they will be able to do it. Yeah. How can't conceive of how you would go about doing it. And I don't mean that in a bad way. It's just at the time, it was so far from people's experience. So by going through a process of understanding, of working through how you can do that, and also really why are we doing things? So, the conversation, why do we produce budget reports? And that's what do you mean? Well, we've got to be financial. Yeah. Well, for me, a budget report is not so much a bank statement that has to be 100%, accurate, down to the penny. It's a thing that you use to check your forecast, and it's a call to action, and we need to get it out of the way as soon as possible, so we can focus on, driving the car looking forwards rather than looking back, So those three things combined, we pulled that off at Tenyas, and, I remember, and I'm absolutely terrible with names, really nice guy. I'm so bad. I can see him. Can't remember his name. Sorry. He was the finance director at Harrogate at the time. And Tenyas is in that area. Yeah. Nice. And they'd just become an FT, one of the first in the country. And I remember the finance director meetings. And he said, well, I've just challenged my team to produce our numbers on working day two. Nice. I think that'll be really good. And I said, we've been doing working day one for some time. Please, come and learn from us. Right. And, not knocking them. They never did. So, and I think that was another thing about when I did it in ambulance services, or we did in ambulance services, it was, oh, well, it must be somehow easier to do in ambulance services. So no one, you know, and again, this sort of sectoral thing I push against this, ambulance service or mental health trust or whatever, we're in an acute hospital, it's much more difficult. Well, no, it's not, you know. So anyway, did that. So we were working there. Then we had the merger into the Yorkshire Ambulance Service. And again, that was a really good opportunity, not only to do work in day one, but to really simplify financial management. And, you know, one of my catchphrases, which I get to use now, I've not used it for ages, is can't code anything wrong if you've only got one code, if you see what I'm saying. So if people spend ages recoding people, and when things do need to be in the right place, don't get me wrong, but if you make your financial management system extremely complicated and you've got loads of cost centers, the chances of you needing to do loads of corrections is even greater. Yeah.
Yeah.
So when we formed the Yorkshire Ambulance Service, there were three organizations. Just one of them had 30,000 account codes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. When we did the trial balance initially there, we had less than 1,000 account codes. Okay. So we radically simplified everything. Yeah. And then we also put in working day one there as well. And that was driven at the time by the board meeting was in the middle of the month. Yeah. Right. So what they used to do was report the numbers 6 weeks out of date.
We've all been there.
Yeah. So we used to produce the numbers in time for the board meeting, you know, and do all the forecasts and everything. So that's how that all started. And then I didn't do it South London, but again, in Bolton. And that again was associated with a massive uptick in terms of how the team were feeling because they'd done this really good thing and they then grew in confidence and done it at Leeds. And I think it also said, apart from that sort of why would you want to wait thing, let's get the numbers, that philosophical thing about what our budget reports for, what we're trying to do here, there's the team development aspect. You have to work together to do it and it's a big success. It's a big call to the organization because the organization will notice something very different. I mean, one of the stories I tell, and again, this is not, it's a true story. And I was the finance director, so I was accountable for this. But there was a point shortly after when I joined Bolton, which was in massive financial turmoil, the chief exec came to me and said, Simon, have the budget reports gone out yet? And this was on the 30th of August. So she's talking about the July budget reports. Yeah. And I said, I'm sure they have, Jackie. She was called Jackie. I'm sure they have. And they hadn't. We hadn't sent them out. And no one had said anything, right? So that was like the far end of what you want. So now they go out on working day one. Everybody knows they're coming. And it's part of the overall financial performance framework that we operate. You know, I recommend it highly. It's interesting to me when it hasn't taken off. The aligned incentive contract took off a lot better. Then working day one, I know you've done it, Mark, within the SBS, on SBS. So that's you and your team done a great job there. But I don't know, there's something. It's almost like that sort of conservatism of some of this concept of it being wrong. It's not wrong. I keep trying to get proper sort of daily reporting going. I've not managed to do that yet, but still got. From point of view of using information to try and estimate, see the trends. And I'm very, very big on the forecasting as well. So the point of all that actual information in terms of the performance management cycle is to check in where we're at.
Yeah.
And then let's use that to update the forecast. And then what do we need to do to deliver what we need to deliver? Yeah.
Yeah, listen, I've deliberately unashamedly started with working day one in terms of picking that out. And I will come on to a line incentive. We'll perhaps go a line incentive contract next. But because, as you know, I've borrowed this. And really proud to say that Portsmouth Hospital's first organisation with an SBS to achieve that. Because everyone always said to me, you could never achieve it with an outsourced provider. And you certainly couldn't achieve it with SBS. So prove that wrong. No, and I'm with you on all that. And this is not about working day one, but my deputy, Kevin Nedapel, always describes it as, previously we never had 100% accuracy because you don't even have 100% accuracy when you do your year-end accounts, do you? There's a bunch of provisions in there. So we might have had 98% accuracy and now we've got 95 or something, but it's not materially different in terms of you making decisions. Our payroll gets processed 28th of the month. So that's in and gone and done, which is 70% of our cost base. So So I think accuracy is a misnomer. I would agree with you. I think the energy in the team that it created here at Portsmouth and continues to provide, like yourself, we go through a very rigorous timetable hour by hour on the day, on day one, and which culminates in me signing numbers off and then budget reports getting issued. Mirroring probably what you're doing at Leeds, but the energy that gives actually is really, really good for the team. And then the power of me standing in front of the exec team the very next morning, so beginning of working day 2 at 8:30, and literally reading out the position as taking the actions and having a whole month to drive forward. And I'd say, Simon, for us, and I'm sure you're the same, our focus is as much on run rate now. So what's happening to the run cost? So run rate is the mantra here, as opposed to budget variance. Now, the two are important, but run rate is the primary thing here at the moment. And having that run rate focus now on working day one, that allows us to then check in on a weekly basis in terms of our temporary workforce spend and so on and so forth to check with. I'm like you, I wouldn't want to see anything different now. But I am equally surprised that I think there's only about a dozen organisations in the country currently, you know, hands up doing working day one properly. So I'm amazed. But there you go. Thank you, Simon, and thanks for always championing that. But I hadn't realised how far back it was in your career. So that's a learning point for me. And of course, Jenny Earthart took it on from yourself into Manchester as well. So we got a few of us spreading it around.
Yeah.
Align incentives contract. Let's get into, because again, I think when you were introducing that sort of stuff, I would have been in Dorset and quite a closed system, and we definitely paid lip service to PBR at the time in order to get the best possible value for the public purse across a small number of organizations, commissioner and provider. I've come here to Portsmouth. To be fair, they've got a legacy of an aligned incentive contract that predates me. But tell me a bit more about that, because I probably want to get into, as well as just the history bit of it, I really want to get into what's your views about where we are now, because obviously we've defaulted into an elective PBR system when a lot of our risk is outside of. So we're kind of in a hybrid at the moment. I just really welcome your views around some of that stuff. I've certainly got some strong views.
Yeah, well, indeed. Well, as have I. So got into the aligned incentive contract in Bolton. Okay. So when I got to Bolton, there was huge pressure on the trust to sort out its financial position, which, you know, when Bolton has a local paper, and one of the headlines in the local paper shortly before I started was trust to make 500 redundancies. You know, so we did make quite a number of redundancies, but not 500. You know, so it was a huge thing for the institution, huge thing for the town, and people were really worried. Okay, so we need to get it sorted out, and monitor were all over the board, and so, you know, use every means available. So, okay, so there were a number of things where we weren't getting paid for things, right, for services. For whatever reason, there was no income stream for it. So raise that. And the CCG at the time, and I don't know if Annette will listen to this or not, but the CCG at the time didn't, you know, were worried that we would consume all the money. So we'd like look for an income solution. So we're sort of leaning towards don't agree to anything type of thing from a sort of for any of those services that we weren't getting funding for. So then we got in, both parties got into this sort of, you know, oh, well, I've thought of this, I've thought of that, well, we can charge you for this, we can not pay you for that. We got into this horrible thing where we're sending letters virtually every week. I think there was 300 letters over a period of 2 years, something ridiculous like that. Anyway, it was just completely disastrous from point of view of how the teams work together.
And the opposite of one NHS.
Well, no, it was. Well, exactly. And yet we managed to achieve, Trust managed to achieve what it needed to achieve, and so did the CCG.
Right.
Yeah. And it came, without going through all the whys and wherefores of it, we came to a sort of an epiphany of, right, well, let's just bin it off. Let's not do this anymore. And this was a time when, you know, you used to have to apply to vary PBR and things like this, you know. And we just said, we're just not doing it anymore. We'll do this thing with an aligned incentive contract, which is values-based. And people used to say, oh, it's just a block contract, Simon. And I'd say, well, no, it's not a block contract, because a block contract is a feature of PBR. It's a thing you can have in PBR for some services. This is a values basing where we're working together, all right? And then, all right, there's a fixed amount of money. Okay, but all the money was in. You know, no one's trying to hide money around down the back of the sofa or anything. And it just worked really, really well. And complete change of how you felt as a finance professional in working in a collaborative fashion. And also from clinical point of view, once you got past, because there is a little bit of oh, well, I can earn my way out of it, you know, in elective specialties. But for a lot of the other specialties, they were doing things that they've been doing it like that for years, and they didn't change them because they knew they would lose money on PBR. And I know when we brought it to, yeah, sorry.
Disincentives.
Almost, no, disincentives to do the right thing. To do the right thing for patients and the right things for resources as well.
Yeah.
I remember when I came to Leeds, we did a big consultation round. Should we move to, you know, I said, I think this would be a really good thing. And did a big consultation on it internally. And we went for it, and it was a really good thing. We have what we call a waste reduction conference, you know, in terms of, you know, waste reduction is removing waste, making cost improvement by removing waste. And it's clinical, so a load of clinicians. And I sat down next to them. Leeds is a big place. I have absolutely no idea who this clinician was. He said, "Oh, are you Simon?" "Yes." "Oh, this aligned incentive contract." I thought, "Oh no, he's going to go. He doesn't like it. He says, "Marvelous." "I've been able to completely reform my such and such clinic because I used to bring everybody back all the time, you know, but I don't have to do that anymore." And this is the thing, it's not like the finance director was forcing on people not to make change. It's just everybody knows how it works, yeah? So they know if they do that, it'll create them a problem for their clinic or whatever, so they don't do it. But we do, I'm privileged to sit on consultant interviews, you know, for our team, you know, and do it every now and again. And they always come and see you before, and every single consultant during that pre-COVID period or who was applying wanted to know about the aligned incentive contract and how it worked. So it's obviously got a big currency in the clinical community, yeah? And I think we can demonstrate in Leeds millions and millions of pounds of pathway changes that have happened that we would definitely not have done if we were on PBR.
Yeah, absolutely.
And this so that clinical engagement's really important in it, as well as it removes a massive source of conflict between, you know, finance teams and systems.
So what are you doing at the moment then, if you don't mind me asking, in your system and in Leeds particularly?
Well, I don't know if I'm allowed to say, Mark. No, right. So, well, I was very and I know you were as well, I was very sort of vocal around this is not a good idea to move to PBR. And we have managed in West Yorkshire to agree a pilot of a different system with NHS England, which we believe maintains the sort of aligned incentive contract principle, but there's still an incentive, or a penalty. So basically, we've just reinvented contract penalties. So essentially, if we don't hit our 52-week wait target by one patient, we'll get a fine of £2,000. Yeah. Right. And if we overachieve it, we'll get a benefit of £2,000. You've got to bring the waiting times down. And to do that, you've got to do more activity, obviously. Mm. But you haven't got all the problems around gaming and doing activity that, you know, not being funny, but if we've got a waiting time of 6 weeks for a certain, which is still the case in some things, you know, some surgical things, if you've got a waiting time for 6 weeks for a routine procedure, and we've got other ones where it's 100 weeks, then we don't need to be investing in doing more of the 6 week stuff, do we? And the PBR, I think, in a way, the PBR system, as it's been put in, will incentivize people to do anything they can to try and get their income up. Mm. Yeah. That then flips in. One of the reasons, right, is the productivity thing, which perhaps we should talk about, because this sort of thing about our productivity is so bad. And the numbers for Leeds, if you take the straight numbers that come out of NHS England, we've got a productivity reduction of from 1920 to now of, I think it's 26%. Of course, you dig into that, there's the methodology that's being used to derive that productivity thing is, you know, is high level and doesn't account for lots of things like we've introduced same day emergency care. That's hurt us on that productivity calculation by 10%.
Yeah.
For instance, pass through costs, of which we have absolutely loads, have gone up because, you know, new cancer drugs, etc. There's no allowance for that at all. So when you adjust for those types of things, you get down to a much more, I'm not saying there isn't a productivity problem, but it's not. It's about a quarter of the size. Yeah. So I do think that sort of PBR counting thing, because colleagues say, oh, it's a very simple system and anybody work with, no, it's not a simple system. And, you know, it's not a stable currency. Things change and it doesn't account for them properly. And that was always a problem for colleagues who can remember trying to agree a local tariff for that new initiative. You know, good luck, take you 18 months, 2 years to agree that local tariff. You know, you remember that, anybody? And you have to do those types of things as new things came along. So it's by definition, it's out of date all the time, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
So anyway, so we're hoping this pilot will be successful. And, you know, we'll see what happens in regard of where PBR is being used. Can you actually detect a difference in terms of how much activity is generated as opposed to what's happening in West Yorkshire? Yeah, it's, so we'll see.
It's that whole West Yorkshire pilot, if you don't mind me asking it. Yeah, it is. Yes. Yeah, good. Yeah. Good. Well, we're good. Good. Good luck with that pilot. And I'm really, really genuinely intrigued to see where you get with that. And good that that's been sort of recognised by Julie and the national team, by the sounds of it, as well as the pilot. Yeah. So it's good. I might have probably got a bit of a bias for you because this organisation and my previous organisation have effectively been hot sites. So so here we've got 1,200 beds. There's only inpatient beds. 60 of them are elective. The rest of them are elective. So you know, mobility to earn income is just not there anyway. And the previous organisation was even more skewed towards...
Well, we had at a certain point in time, we had 96 elective beds in our organisation, which has 2,000 beds. And that's because of all the no reason to reside pressures and all those types of things. Absolutely. But,
So I'm a big advocate for operating within the envelope that's there, being transparent about the envelope and then doing the best to get maximum value. For that envelope. So probably coming at it for different reasons, but ultimately the same place. So thank you for that. I'm intrigued by where that takes you. That probably takes us into a bit around, you've had certainly in your career, in the way you've described, you've certainly been in some challenged financial organisations. Yeah. You've been brought into organisations to turn them around, in effect. So you've worn the scars and got the experience from that. What's your reflections on where we are at the moment? Because obviously, clearly, we've just gone through a really challenging period. So everyone listening to this podcast from the finance community will probably feel a little bit bruised and have their own experiences locally, but clearly we're in a period where, coming out of COVID, last year was what it was, this year's deficit is now not quite what we could have been planned, but who knows where it's gonna go. We're all looking at run rates and looking at where that's going to take us. What's your view around this, the part of the cycle we're in at the moment, Simon, and where that takes us next?
So if you take there's that Radio 4 program, isn't it? There's the long view, isn't it? And you look at NHS, and I always get these numbers slightly wrong, but you look at NHS fund expenditure over the since 1948, and it broadly goes up by 3.8% a year, doesn't it? And funding also broadly goes up by 3.8% a year over and above inflation, but it doesn't do it in a straight line, does it? Some years there's loads, and some years there's nothing.
Yeah.
And the years when there's nothing or little, there's always big financial pressure. So we're in that part of that cycle at the moment. I think we do have to recognize, and I sometimes, when I say this in my own organization, I was doing a briefing last week, and there was, you know, it's one of the, what we call team briefs. So there's about 100 people in the room. There's loads more people on teams. And there was a colleague at the back of the room who I didn't recognize, being sort of presumably general manager or whatever. It's a big place, don't know everybody. And I said, and we've got thousands more staff than we had 3 years ago. No one could see this. He did a double take. I could see him actually do it. And we have got thousands more staff. We've got more staff than we've ever had.
Yeah, same.
Yet we have got huge staffing problems. Well, why is that? Well, we've, you know, fine, there's some additional capacity where we've got no reason to reside and all those types of things. That's, let's say, 20% of it. We have invested in lots of things to do with urgent and emergency care. We have invested hugely in staffing on safety basis. And we've used the ability, we had that ability to do that 3 years ago. There's been a huge increase in spend. All of this is true. A friend of mine texted me when one of our recent prime ministers, the one, you know, was on the telly and made that very point. And someone said, that's not true, is it? This is lies, surely. No, it is true.
Yeah.
Right. But it doesn't feel like it's people in the service, does it? It doesn't feel like it. So that we've got, you know, the sort of size of the actual real waste reduction, as I would call it, challenge currently. And there's all this, oh, we're over-egging it and stuff. We've got 7% is our target, all right? So when I was first year at Bolton, we did 7% then. There was sort of a little bit of income in there, not a lot. We did. So I don't say it's impossible, but it's very, very difficult. Yeah, and we've gone through that period of extreme, you know, if you were a nurse in ICU or an ICU, you know, can you imagine what it would have been like through COVID? Absolutely, really not really difficult. and been through all that, and now we've got a massive financial problem, and we've got cost of living crisis, and we've got strikes like I've never experienced strikes like this. I don't think the NHS has ever experienced strikes like this. So, but it's still true that we've got all that money has been invested. Okay. So I think what we've got to try and marshal ourselves together, and we, you know, and the colleagues are, there's lots of new colleagues who haven't been through this type of thing before at more senior level. We've got to work with our teams and our organisations to manage the issue. We'd say in the Leeds way, you know, in a value-based way. But we do need to manage it, is my thought. And we are really lucky in that we've got that we're in a collaborative space now, where we, in the past it was like, oh, that organisation's got a problem, they're bad, you know, and what they're doing over there, they've got a problem. So we've got to work together in that collaborative way to make the absolute best value for the money we can, and to, you know, live in the resources we've got, is my thought, if that makes any sense. But I'm not saying it's incredibly, really, it is really challenging. I don't know, in Leeds, I don't want to make any announcements. I don't know if we'll pull it off this year in Leeds. You know, I'm very, very concerned. But colleagues are, you know, I'm not feeling concerned by myself. That, and that, I think, all that sort of fluffy, you know, sometimes it's a bit fluffy, all this sort of organisational development type stuff that we do, and values and what you're talking about, values, why are you talking about that? All sort of, we've just done a thing in Leeds called Goal Deployment. It's part of our sort of Virginia Mason, as well, sort of Leeds Improvement Method, lean sort of implementation. And it's just about being really clear what our priorities are. So it's not rocket science in that sense. But we've got 7 key commitments for the year, one of which is to deliver the financial plan. You know, so that's clearly a focus for the organisation. It's not the only focus. It's one of 7 key things, you know, deliver access targets, reduce infections, things like that. And all the work that we do around clinical leadership and engagement, it all builds that point where you are able, and the Leeds Improvement Method, that we've got sort of training colleagues to tackle problems and deal with them in a sort of patient-centered way, that all gives you great strength to deal with problems like this that we're now facing. And we will work our way through it, and it will be all right. You know, but it's going to be this year, next year.
Yeah.
And I suggest a couple of years after the election, at least continue to be incredibly difficult.
Thank you, Simon, for describing that. And I can definitely read the parallels, strong parallels, with my organisation here in Portsmouth and what I understand around organisations that surround me in my integrated care system also. Mm. And I think that's going to be really helpful for others to hear what you've just said and know that they're kind of not alone, because I think one of the things I've reflected on in recent years is some of the networks have narrowed in terms of our geographies and the ways of working. So it's just helpful sometimes just to know that how others are dealing with things across the patch. And actually, if you don't mind me saying, it's also helpful, Simon, to hear from you, given how I've described you all the way through this. And I genuinely mean, in terms of the esteem that, you know, the value people put on you as a finance director, and to hear you articulate some of the challenges that we're all feeling is really helpful. So thank you, and good luck with the challenge. Obviously, it's probably a good segue actually into your team. And so, you know, so how have you managed to keep your team buoyant within all that? We talk about working day one and all that sort of stuff, this planning round's really tested me and my team here. I'm not afraid to say, and I'd just be interested in how you've managed to lead your team, and why that. I don't just mean your finance team, actually. I actually mean your clinical team and the organisation, because that's a leadership challenge, isn't it? What's your version of that in Leeds?
So what I'd say in these things is, these things don't start when these things start when they start, but you know, if you've got a terrible, you know, if your culture's not good, then you're not going to be able to face the challenge when it comes. Yeah. And if you're in challenge and you've not got a good culture, then an important thing to change as soon as possible is the culture. Right. And I mean, years ago, I'd be very uncomfortable about these, you know, we all learn all the time. Don't I? I'd be very, this culture, what they're talking about, you know, I used to be one of these sort of people that lunch was for wimps and this type of thing. I don't know, it might sound a bit of an odd thing, but if I look back on my career, there's many highlights and I think, oh, that's really great. But there's many moments of embarrassment and what an idiot, why did I do that? You know, that, I suppose that describes my learning, you know, as I've gone on. I wouldn't do the same thing in the same way again. Coming from a point of view of, fundamentally, as an organization, Yeah, as a group of people working together for a common goal of, looking after patients or the population's health, however you want to put it. We've got, many interests are aligned, aren't they? So we work towards that common goal. And you think just rationally, how are you going to do that? Well, we've got to work together effectively, haven't we? Yeah, and each different discipline. So a marvellous presentation about one of our clinical teams the other day. And they were saying, oh, yeah, well, whether you're the porter, or you're the nurse, or you're the consultant, we're all, if one of us is not doing our task, the task is not happening. And that also extends to people like finance colleagues and general managers and things like that, doesn't it, in terms of that overall challenge. So if you've got an approach and way of working and being in your organization that recognizes that, however you do it, and that's a real thing, you're going to have enormous strength, well, not only in the organization, but beyond, that aligned incentive contract, beyond the organization into the system, however you want to describe it. Okay, so that's step number one. So why are we doing this? That's important. What our sort of mission is, that's important. So we have our little mission in the finance team to be the best finance team to help patient care in the Leeds way.
Yeah.
So all those sort of things, great. All the things you see in One NHS Finance about collaborating, working together, supporting colleagues, fantastic. That's going to help you deal with the big problem. Yeah. And, if I'm a leader, am I visible to my staff? Do they feel they can approach me? If there's a problem, will they let me know? All these things are good things in themselves and, moral, if you like, but also they help on the bottom line. So we've done a whole load of things with the team over a period of time that got us to a place which was quite a good place before COVID.
Before COVID, yeah.
Massively proud of what my team did during COVID. Repurposing themselves to do different things, as lots of finance and procurement colleagues around the country will have done. Going around on the wards right at the beginning when we were delivering PPE and things like that, and didn't have PPE on themselves. So then coming out and then going back into the deep freeze, if you like, of where we're at, has been a challenge. And we do temperature check every quarter for our team, sort of little staff survey. And you can see it's really interesting. And it is very good. I'm not saying everything's terrible, but it is very good. But it had a massive boost during the first part of COVID.
Yeah.
It got a lot better. And then it's slowly been getting less good. Still good, but less good quarter by quarter.
Yeah.
And so, and that's not something that we can ignore, that, so we've got that store of sort of enthusiasm and positivity, if you like, but it's slowly draining away because of all the reasons we've just been talking about. So how do we re-energize that? Yeah. I don't know if I have every answer on that basis, but one thing I do know is don't ignore it. Yeah.
Yes.
So we had a little time out for our financial management team recently, and it was specifically around these issues. And we had a Slido. We had a Slido at this financial.
Yeah.
All right.
And such is the modern
first
way.
Question, and how are you feeling? Yeah, how are you feeling? And the word like frustrated, exhausted, all these sort of words were coming up really big. Yeah. And then down there was, there were positive things in there, but the overall feeling was, we're really a bit tired and really a bit frustrated with things. And why have we had to do the plan 15 times and all this type of stuff? Yeah.
Yeah.
And all you can do is recognize that that's what's happening and say, I see that's happening and that's not good. I don't want that to be the case. Let's work how we can, do better and then engage the team in doing that. Right. So I suppose I'm a very long answer to your question, but that's all comes like, there's no sort of switch where you press a button and you say, I've ticked these few two or three boxes. And that gives your team resilience and everything. It's like, it's a core thing that you've got to focus on the whole time and you've got to pay attention to it. It's a constant effort.
I 100% agree. And I worry, though, for maybe, dare I say, some lesser experienced, dare I say, leaders within the finance community, perhaps leading, dare I say, even, some smaller teams who at this moment may feel so overwhelmed that actually some of that stuff maybe get forgotten and will have a detrimental impact to them and their the teams in a way that you can't describe, you know?
Yeah, and I've made those mistakes, if that
we all have.
But didn't have, when I was first a finance director, the sort of infrastructure we've now got around One NHS Finance, and when I was growing up, the classic thing was you became a finance director of an FT, yeah? Well, you got authorised in an FT, and the first thing you would say is, right, and this would be at the finance director meeting that everybody used to go to, we are now an FT. I don't have to come to this meeting anymore, and I'm not. And then they just wouldn't go. Yeah, that was the culture at the time. So very, very isolating, yeah? So we've got the opposite of that now, haven't we, hopefully? So there's huge support out there in the network,
there is.
In different ways. And one thing, if anybody does anything as a result of this call, if they're feeling in any way isolated or challenged, or, you know, they don't know what to do, just get in touch with colleagues, you know, in your own network or through One NHS Finance. There will be people who are having those same experiences. There will be people who can give advice and help, you know.
Yeah. So, yeah. 100%. Absolutely echo that. Simon, thank you. And thank you for everything you're doing with One NHS Finance, and particularly with Future Focus Finance, as a very valued work stream within that to keep that network alive, which is exactly why that was conceived in the first place, and you're the perfect person to drive that forward. So thank you, Simon. Listen, I wonder whether we're at the point in the time now whether we get into the quick fire round and just learn a bit more about you.
Yeah.
So this is quick fire, so whatever comes into your mind first. I won't particularly ask you any follow-ups, we'll just canter through some quick fires. So first of all, just give me a feel for give others a feel as well in terms of a day in the life of Simon, but just a little window into that. What were you doing immediately before this conversation?
I should say
we're having this conversation middle of the afternoon on a Tuesday.
You'll be surprised to learn, Mark, I was looking at the forecast going, oh dear me, oh dear me, and thinking what to do about it.
Okay, so outside of work, Simon, what sort of keeps you happy outside of work? What are your sort of interests? How do you relax away from the day job?
All right. Well, okay. So, you know, I've got my family. I've got my two kids. We're getting, you know, both boys, one's 21, one's 19, both still at home. You know, so it's all that, you know, wonderful family stuff and going out, you know, my wife. So it's all great. But when I've done that, I go on to my proper hobbies. I read books.
Oh, right. What sort of books do you read?
No. That's the thing where people always say, I like walking and read books. Oh. That's what they say on the TV. You know? No, I do. I've got a lot of read books. But yeah, I'm last sort of 4 or 5 years, I've got really into astrophotography. So I take pictures of clouds of gas in the sky at night. And then, you know, don't tell anybody, but, you know, I can't sing. As people who are at the One NHS Finance conference know very well, I can't sing. I'm a very, very bad singer, but I do like play the guitar very badly. So I've sort of potted about with music since I was about, you know, 16 as well. You know, but that's part of the reason why I'm deaf. You know, too much deaf. I'm getting really badly deaf as I get older. And I'm sure that's got to do with all the loud music I listened to as a youth. But anyway, never mind.
So what was the last music concert you went to?
Oh, my God. You did ask. Right. So I went. There's a pub in Leeds called The Grove. Yeah. And my mate spotted it. They had a band on a couple of Thursdays ago. And there was a band called The Beer Snobs. Yeah.
Beer Snobs, right.
Yeah, and they're sort of, it was a bit of a folk, and there were a few more folk acts on before that, yeah. But if you don't believe me, if you go on YouTube, there's a little competition for you. Someone took a video of that, and there's a room with about 15 people in it. It was such a big gig, yeah. And I can be sat at a table, yeah. So there you go. So that was the last one I went to, yeah.
So the Beer Snobs in the Grove in Leeds, YouTube, and 15 of you in the audience. I might look at that up myself later. What sort of music generally then? What are you into?
Well,
generally?
I'm stuck in a time warp, Mark. So
we all are.
Yeah, yeah. So I, you know, alternative music from the 1980s, 1990s. Some of my favourite bands, the Cocteau Twins. Yeah,
oh,
if anybody's heard of that. Yeah, and well, my favourite band. But my most favourite live band is a band called The Cud. Yeah. Right. So I criticised Dave Elcock. He wasn't criticising me. He noticed. Yeah, lots of people know Dave Elcock from.
Yeah, I do. I know him well. Work with him very well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was at the HMFA conference on the last day, and I was going straight home. So I was dressed informally in my jeans and t-shirt, and I was wearing a Cud t-shirt. Yeah. And he was shocked and amazed that I would wear a Cud t-shirt at the HMFA conference. Oh, anyway, for anybody who's looking up The Cud, they were a Leeds band at the time in sort of early 90s. So does anybody remember the Happy Mondays?
Oh, yeah, they were in Manchester. Yeah, of course.
So they're not like the Happy Mondays, but there's a bit of Manchester Leeds rival, isn't it? So the Happy Mondays used to have a T-shirt, which said Manchester, north of England on it. That was what it was, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The Cud had a T-shirt that said Leeds, north of Manchester. Okay.
The Cud, right. Spotify later tonight this evening. I'll be seeing if
they've
got anything on Spotify.
They're on there.
Last couple from me, Simon, and then I'll let you go. Perfect weekend. What would be your perfect weekend?
All right. Okay. So get home at reasonable time. Yeah. Sky's clear, so I can do my astrophotography each night. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, going out, me and Mrs. Worthington tend to potter about. Yeah. So we like to, we're members of the National Trust.
Yeah.
Again, I never thought I'd be a member of the National Trust. So we'll potter about somewhere in Yorkshire or the surrounds and go to somewhere nice and have lunch and all that type of stuff, and then spend some time with my kids. Yeah.
Brilliant. Thank you. And listen, my final one, it's not really a quick fire one, but it's a genuine question, Simon. You're so good at supporting. I know you're so good at supporting your team. I know that from conversations I've had with your team at conferences and stuff. But you're also so good at supporting the service through Future Focus Finance and everything you do. But where do you get your support from?
Oh, good question. Well, I think my colleagues, I always sort of tend to form really sort of strong bonds with, not just finance colleagues, but, operational colleagues. So, clinical colleagues. So over my time, I've got friends, who I've got through work, who are like my network, and, from different times, and they're a big source of support. The One NHS Finance Network itself, it was really great to catch up with people at the conference the other day. And I'm a big advocate of coaching. I'm not a qualified coach, but I've had a coach, the same coach for absolutely ages. And so that's still an effective way of working for me. And that's another thing, when I was a lad and I was stupid. Mm. Oh, they've got a coach. They must have got some sort of problem, this type of thing. Well, no. So really, really does help you to think about things and think what you can change. When about yourself, it doesn't mean there's anything wrong with you, but how do you change what you're doing to become even more effective, in what we're trying to do? So
well done. Excellent. Simon, thank you so much for your time on this podcast. Really appreciate it. I certainly got a lot of value from that, and I'm sure all of our listeners will as well. So thank you so much, Simon. And thank you to everyone else listening in, and thank you for choosing HFMA Talk. If you're enjoying listening to this podcast, please do spread the word, as well as subscribing to HFMA Talk on your podcast app. And if there's anyone else you'd like me to have a conversation with next, then please do get in touch also. But until next time, thank you for listening. Take good care, and see you again. Thank you.